I'd like to talk about a very unspoken about topic. And tonight's topic is the topic of chrayus. What makes someone into a bala chrayus? Probably one of the greatest attributes you could say about someone is a bala chrayus. What makes somebody into someone who's viewed as a responsible person? So just to start off with an insight from the Torah, before we get a little more practical, then we decide on the more practical things, whether that's considered a Torah insight or not, subject to your agreement and approval. So the pasuk says, the whole parsha of Yaakov selling the bechorah to Esav. V'yomer Esav, hinein hanochi holich lamas v'lamas zeli bechorah. Here I'm going to die. What do I need this bechorah for? V'yomer Yaakov, swear to me. V'yimcharas bechorah sol Yaakov. He sold the bechorah to Yaakov. Yaakov gave Esav the lechem nezid adashim, the lentils, vayochal, and Esav ate it, vayesh, and he drank, vayokam, he got up, vayelach, and he walked, and he left, vayivez Esav es habechora. And Esav then disgraced the bechora. Vayivez Esav es habechora. So what's going on over here? What did Esav do so terrible? He sold the Bechorah to Yaakov for a pot of cholent. Even if it was, you know, yak in the pot or whatever it was. That was a great picture. A pot of cholent, even if it was the best cholent you ever tasted, quote unquote, even if it was, still it was considered a improper for Esav to give it up. Considered improper. So Rashi says, when Esav said, "I would need the chorfa," hina nochi holoch lamos. So Rashi says that Esav asked, "Mativa shel avoda zu? What is this whole avoda that a bechor has to do?" Amalei Yaakov told him there are many azharos, va'onshin, umisas, tluyimba, many different halachas, ka'osan shishanino, like we learned, elohein shabemisa, certain avoda that you do, you have misa for if you don't do it right, shtuya yayin, drinking wine, ufure rosh. And it says, Omar, Esav said, "I need holy chlamas ayoda. I'm going to end up chayv misa. Imkein mach chofetz liba. What do I need it for? Why would I want it? I'm going to end up in trouble because of this avoda. Who wants it? Good riddance. I sold it." Okay, that's the psukim. This is one of my favorite non-Rosh Hashiva Divrei Torah. So this years ago, not much years ago. So Moshe has an awesome kasha on this sugya. That was told us. Yeah. So Rashi says the reason why Esav sold the Bechora is because he said, like, "Oi, all these halachas, I'm not going to be able to do these halachas. You have to get up early, the karbonas at the proper time. I'm not going to be able to do it now. I have misa." So in a certain sense, Esav sold it to the better man. He knew who Yaakov was. Yaakov was Ish Tam Yoshev Olim. What would be so terrible? Would you want him to be the Bechor? You want him to be doing the Avoda? You want him to be saying, Esav was doing Mara Kohen? I guess at a certain point it went to Shevet Levi, but at that point he was the Bechor, he would be doing the Avoda. Esav knew who he was, I presume, and he saw who Yaakov was. Yaakov was learning. Yom V'Laila. He became the gadol of the two. He became the reshiva. So what was so terrible that Esav sold the Bechor to Yaakov? You would think he should get a yashikoyach. That was very big of you. You know, you saw that you weren't able to do it, so you gave it over to Yaakov. I'd say it's a good thing. You should get a shkayach for that. Get an award. What did he do? So terrible? That's the kasha Moshe Feinstein asks. And I love that kasha, because don't we all often have that kasha every time somebody comes over to us to do something? Oh, don't ask me. I can't do it right. Oh, ask him. Or ask that guy. We do the same thing. When people come over to us, they want us to take on certain responsibilities. We say, like, you know, me? Yeah, go ask somebody else. You want someone else to do that, to give a class, to give a shiur, to speak? What do you want from me? I'm not doing that.
So it was like Esav was being responsible enough to know that.
Yeah, Esav did a good job. I think Esav should get a yeshkayach. Why would the Torah say it? By Yivas Esav is a bechorah. He disgraced it. He defiled it. It's pretty harsh words. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that a person has to accept upon himself achrayus lekavod shamayim, even though it's very serious. The achrayus is kveda. It's very heavy. And there'll be many people, there can be so many people complaining about it, to you about it. So many complaints. And you would think he had every reason not to do it. Someone better than me, he could do it. And people complain if I do it, I won't do it right. And it's such a terrible burden on me. And you have all these excuses, but if you wiggle out of it and you're giving it over to a Yaakov Avinu, what's that called? Bizayon. You mevaz the Torah. Because something that comes to you, it's for you to do. It came into your lap. You're mechuyev to do it. A person has to stretch himself for kavod shamayim. He's required to push himself, to stretch himself, and to go outside of the box, outside of his own box that we create for ourselves, which is so restricting. We're required to do it. Had this conversation with a Talmud today. I'm trying to think what the exact conversation was. Boy tells me that I'll have to get to it. I don't remember exactly. I heard this vart once from a chashuva. He's today one of the chashuve Rosh Yeshivas in our system. And he told me this maisa that Rabbi Welcher Shlita had asked if he could join. Rabbi Welcher's older, had asked him, recruited him to help him bake the matzahs. Rabbi Welcher started a business when he was in Kolo. It grew into a... probably a big business. And so he asked this very, he was a bacher at the time, a very fine bacher, and, you know, he asked him, can you help come to help bake the matzahs? We're going on Tuesday to bake the matzahs. So he said, nah, I don't want to go. He doesn't want to go. And Rabbi Welch wanted him to go. He said, I think you should go. I need you to come. And he didn't want to go. He said, let me speak it over with my Rebbe. So his Rebbe is Rabbi Hochberg. Hachberg's one of the Rebbeim in the high school. So he went to ask Rabbi Hochberg the Shaila. So Rabbi Hochberg told him, you don't want to go, right? You don't want to go. Why don't you want to go? He says, it's too big of a achrayus. It's too big of a achrayus. I don't want to take on my shoulders that somebody's going to be eating chametz because of me. Because if I do one thing wrong, it's very complicated, matzah baking. It's really like to do everything perfectly. If there's, you know, the rollers and the timing and the, you have to work fast, mamish fast. And you don't want to do it quite right. So what do you want to do? And he's a chashuv guy. He knew he was a chashuv guy. He was so chashuv that he didn't want to take on the achrayas of making matzahs, to make chametz. So Hochberg said, so who do you want to send? You want to send all the other yalds that are going to go, who you understand are not as, you know, they don't have as much zrizus. You're letting them go bake the matzahs, and you're not worried about all the chametz that other people think. It's still your achrayus. If you could go and you don't do it, and you're sending someone else to go, so that's your achrayus. You're also under your achrayus. That convinced them to go. If you're in a position to do something, mechuyev to do it. You have to do it. Achrayus, it's your responsibility. I heard this from my grandfather, Rav Shalom. My grandfather, it's not a holy story. So my grandfather lived, I told you stories in Pennsylvania. So I asked my grandfather once when I went to visit him, I asked him why he didn't move to New York. He has five children, kind of hard, and the families, and they all live in the New York area. Four live in Brooklyn, one lives in New Rochelle. So the five married children, grandchildren, you know. So I once asked him, I was scared, we don't want you to move to New York. So he told me that when he was running away, I think it was from World War One, like in 1912, 13, 14, something like that, as he was leaving his house, the story is almost funny. When he told me it was funny, but I realized it's really powerful. He said that his father told him that you're going, you know, to America, make sure you take care of your younger brother, Harry. So I had an uncle, Harry, who's 3 years younger. And so my grandfather's time was, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, 15 years old. He was taking with him a younger brother who was 12 years old at the time. So my grandfather told me that, he just told me the story. So I asked him, like, what does that mean? He says, to take care of his parents told me to take care of his younger brother. So his younger brother lives in Pennsylvania. So I heard that my grandfather was in his, like, 80s, and he still wouldn't move to New York because he felt a responsibility to take care of his younger brother. Like, he was 83 and he was 80. You know, to take care of him. My parents told me I should take care of my younger brother. They didn't say for how long. They said I should take care of him. So he would take care of him. And, you know, my great uncle, Harry, like, didn't have any, you know, he was married, didn't have children. And so my grandfather felt it was his achrayus to take care of him. It's an amazing thing. Achrayus, when you feel a responsibility, you have to measure up. You have to do it. I want to try and bring some examples that things that are nogea here. But one of the mice I want to say over. When I was the Rashiva secretary, so. It's an amazing job because here you have all these hanhola who are, you know, I spent my first 13 years in yeshiva, you could barely see the yeshiva. You came to shir, maybe you had a word, you know, in shir you could speak a little bit if you fight it out with 60, 70 guys, try and get a word in, you could take a Shabbos. Amol, you can catch him if you were walking in when he was walking out. Yeshiva didn't spend a lot of time in yeshiva. And every time there was a shmooze, there were like 50 people around him, you know. It's like, it wasn't so easy. And there was always people, you know, let's say a first-year guy here is like, there's a third-year guy, it's right here. He's a third-year guy, a first-year guy. You can imagine what is over there. If you're a first-year guy, there's people who are 15th-year guys. So unless you're a 15th-year guy, you know, like, there's a lot of years to have to jump over. And then a lot of them are on the Hanahoa. We're also trying to get to the Reshiva. It was very, very difficult. So when I became the secretary, it was like, wow. Like, I was driving the Reshiva all over the place all this time. And Reshiva was like, aside from all of the, you know, He was a very special person to learn from. But he was also the Rosh Hashiva. So all the complaints that you have over here, like, the, you know, how come we don't only serve eggs on Friday, or how come the milk is spoiled? The yeshiva was also his yeshiva. So, like, nothing could happen without the yeshiva. It was like, it was unusual. Like, you have to go up to go to the yeshiva also about these things. So it was a great opportunity. So there was one thing. I just wanted to tell you one thing. I felt I had a responsibility to better the yeshiva. So I was trying to think of one thing I can do to better the yeshiva. Because I felt like, what could be my legacy as yeshiva secretary? I'm just doing this for selfish reasons. Do something. So there are two things I decided to take on. I want to speak about one of them. And just to show that if a person takes responsibility, I want to just find one thing I'm going to try and make the yeshiva better, you know, from that position. So I decided that I'm going to pick something that everyone could appreciate. So the minhag of the yeshiva was that on Sunday mornings they didn't get a bread delivery because the bakery was off on Sundays. They used to deliver at 6 in the morning. So Sundays they came in late. There's no bread delivery on Sundays. So on Friday they used to deliver double bread. And this is classic Forest Hills. For those of you that grew up there, you know, it's like no chiddush. Everyone else is like, what? But I see Mayor smiling, so he could relate to it. So they used to order double the bread on Friday, and they would freeze, right? Ginsburg would take the bread, and you put it in the freezer. And Sunday morning, they would take the bread, and they put it on trays, and it would come out like, you know, half frozen, half, what do you call it? Sunday morning was like, oh, no. It was one of those, you know, come into, like, half stale bread, because the freezers weren't too good. So I was going to say, so I'm going to see if we can get fresh bread on Friday. So I'm going to tackle this, okay? I'm going to tackle this problem, find out. So I went through everyone bureaucracy, after bureaucracy. I found out that Rabbi Rosenholz is in charge of the bread. So I asked Rabbi Rosenholz, how come we don't get bread on Friday? He said, they won't deliver, which is what I heard. I said, oh. So in the meantime, I had gone around to different bakeries, and I found a bakery that will deliver to us on Sunday. I think I'm such a genius. He says, yeah. First, have to make sure, you know, Yashin, because that bakery had Yashin. So I said, I need Yashin. So they can do Yashin for us. And how much do you pay? I went back. We can only pay this amount. We'll pay that amount. So I said, okay. So we can order it this Sunday. We can have the first fresh bread since Reb David passed away. We can have our first fresh bread on a Sunday morning. No. Rabbi Rosenholz says, no. First, I have to call the bakery and tell them that I have another place that's ready to deliver. I have to give them a chance. Okay. So he called the bakery. He says, we have a bakery that'll deliver on Sunday. We want to get fresh bread. So the bakery said, okay, we'll deliver on Sundays. So, like, mamish, nothing had to be done. But in Ad HaYom HaZeh, I'm told, there's still fresh bread on Sunday as my legacy. That is fresh bread if you ever make it to Queens and you're eating bread on a Sunday morning. But it was an experiment on my part because I wanted to do something. And I didn't even end up doing anything. I just made a couple of phone calls to a couple of bakeries, and you see how much could happen. If a person just, like, puts in the effort to try and change something so it could happen. Okay, by a different vibe, you remind me, I'll tell you the other. I did two things. One was Gashmias, one was Ruchnias. That was my idea. And the next time I'll tell you something else. But I think the point here is really to try and accomplish something. It doesn't take a lot of effort. It's only wants to take achrayas. And I think in the yeshiva, unfortunately, you know, everything is done for us, so it's very hard to take achrayas. The custodian's clean, and the cook cooks. We don't have to cook anything ourselves or to make anything ourselves. We don't have to. And everything is done. But if you look closely, people can take achrayas for lots of things. You know, I was trying to think of some ideas, but, you know, think of the ideas yourself to take achrayas for something. I'm giving one example, but it's not meant to be a taina at all. Just we had a Rebbe meeting today with the High School Bayim, so it came up, but it's like here is something just sitting there. You have a Talmud in the yeshiva who's sick, you know, Yochanan, sick in the hospital. And we should really do something. I have no idea what to do. We should do something. So hey, we could wait till, you know, one of the Rebbeim gets up and gives a shmooze and everyone should do this and, you know, and go around. Could you, you know, agree to do this? We could do that. Or could not wait. I'm just giving an example of something someone could do. Could take, okay, I'm going to try and take care of that. There could be an issue, any kind of problem. There's a conflict with the, you know, over the, there's always a conflict with the basketball court, with the, during lunchtime, with the high school and the Beis Medrash. It's always a conflict, but I'm just giving examples, like, someone's always waiting for someone to resolve the conflict. But a Baal HaKrayos would go ahead and say, okay, I'm going to try and resolve the conflict. Find out who to speak to from this, from the high school, so the Beis Medrash will sit down, and I'm going to organize a meeting, and we'll try and see if we can work it out in a way that everyone can be happy. It's just taking a chrayas means to do something about it. The dormitory it gets very messy. So a Baal HaKrayos, you know, take the initiative. You know, a couple of guys could go ahead one night, go ahead. And again, I'm not saying to do any of them. I'm just giving examples of something. If you want to take a chrayas, it's like sitting open territory. You know, let's say I haven't been to the common room, and I also haven't seen it on the screen or anything. So I don't know what it looks like. It could be it's immaculate. I'm just giving it as an example. So the common room is a mess. So, you know, one or two guys who go ahead one night and clean it up and get a box. And, you know, the people did, I see, someone once upon a time set up this gemach. I don't know when it started, but it probably precedes anyone that's here. And one day a guy started a gemach. You know, he got a couple of Tylenols and he wrote gemach. And it's grown to lots of different things. There's another area, you know, it's like a legacy. Whoever started that, it's a legacy. It's left over here. And all these types of things, a person can start to take a chrayas to try and help. You think about how we can help. That thing with the bread, you know, when I was in yeshiva, started because I was trying to come up with something that I could do that would be helpful. You know, and it was on my mind. I was trying to think about it for a good month or so. Then I came up with this idea that, well, maybe I could help that way. How am I going to? I had no idea. I didn't even know what the problems were. I just said, I'm going to try and solve that problem. It's not doing any earth-shattering, and there'd be any rocket science. And I probably didn't need to be the yeshiva secretary to do it. I just didn't think of it until that point. And I remember there was one chaver of mine, you want to talk about achrayas, the yeshiva had his share of machlokas in his day with different situations that happened in yeshiva. There was one Talmud who was a chash of a mechanech, and there was a big machlokas with the yeshiva. Okay? It's not a known name. A big machlokas. I knew about it. I heard about it. It's a big, big machlokas. And this Talmud, who was already an accomplished mechanech, almost told him by retiring, accomplished mechanech, he was in America. And a mamish, a chavra of mine, said, wow, it's a very big thing to make shalom. Shalom is a great thing. So he went over to this person. He said, you know, have you had shalom lechem? My name is so-and-so. And he was mamish, you know, he was in the kolel. So if he was in his, you know, mid to late 20s, this mechanech was in his low to mid 60s. It was a 40-year gap. Okay, so went over to him. He says, you know, you're leaving. Do you ever speak to the Shiva? He says, no. He says, it's now Shon Said. We're trying to end it. You know, come over to the Shiva. Come over to the house. You know, you'll ask the Shiva, you know, Mechila, and it'll be good. It'll be done. He says, I have that plane to catch. I'm leaving now. He says, well, come over. Take 2 minutes and it'll be done. It's lasted 30 years. It'll be done. He pushed. Mamish, he had no shaykhs other than he wanted to make shalom. So he went over to this. It was like a little bit of chutzpah, but he did it. And he brought this chash of a person over to the house. And he had him outside. He said, let me go inside. And he spoke to the Rebbetzin, Aleh Shalom. And he said, you know, so-and-so wants to come and ask Mechila. So the Rebbetzin said, oh, you know, it said the Reshiva is sleeping now. So when is he supposed to get up? In about an hour. says, no, he's got some kind of catch. You can't. I said, I'm sorry. You can't wait to a shiva. So my friend said, I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I just want to show the Baal Kli to overstep his bounds. I don't think so. But maybe you'll think so. He says, have to wake the reshiva up for this. He's coming special. He twisted his arm, but he's coming special. So Aaron said, we can't go up. So my friend said, he told me the story, that if the Rebbetzin doesn't go up to the wake the reshiva up, I'm going to go up. So the Rebbetzin went up, got the reshiva, and they mamish made shalom. It took a minute, they made shalom, and it was done. That's taking a chrayas or something. Now, I'm not saying you should say, I'm going to go wake the reshiva. I don't know if that was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. But I'm using it only as an example. If we want to take care of something, you have to, check, make sure it's the right thing to do. And I'm not saying you should go off on your own. But taking a chrayas, the cleanliness of the building. Sometimes you come up, like Motzei Shabbos. This is Mr. Friedman told me. He says, you can't call a custodial team to come in for 30 minutes of work. The only minimum is like 3 hours of work, or like $200, $250 of work. They don't come in just for, to sweep up a crumb that fell on the floor. They're not going to do that. You have to wait till the next day they come in. So the guys come, I hear this. The guys come back from the J, and they make a masiva. Okay, and then there's Rabbi Sharfman Shir the next day, and breakfast the next day, and there's time to clean it. There's father and son, so Shalash Shudas, they have the high school Shalash Shudas, and then the high school Shalash Shudas, but there's father and son. How come the yeshiva doesn't clean it up? Well, who are we going to get to clean it up? We can't hire a custodian to come clean it up. It'll take 8 minutes to clean it up. They're not coming in for 8 minutes, I think the minimum 3 hours. So 3 hours, charge yeshiva $200. So all right, so it's a problem. It's a problem, there's lots of people in the building. We can't, he can't find anyone to do it. He doesn't know anyone. He can ask someone. He's trying to get this way. But there are people I see. I don't know who, but he knows that there are people, could be people sitting in this room. There are people who feel the achrayas that, Sharpen's giving shear the next day. Father and son's coming. He told me that someone, not every week, someone definitely cleans up sometimes. That's another example of, wow, a person's thinking, I take a prize for it. There are a lot of areas that we can do this. If we just have to think, have to have a olam chesed yibana, we have to think about how we can make an impact on the situation around us. Many things that we do, mamash last for Doris, you don't realize, it's a tremendous chus. The person who thought about going with a pushka around during davening was a good idea. it's really different types of things, suggestions, and how suggestions are made, and the whole food services here is mamash revamped. Anyone hear stories about 6-7 years ago, mamash, we was stale bread and water, compared, but a lot of people in the yeshiva took a chrayas to try and make it better. People took a chrayas. You take a chrayas and you do a little bit of a time, pruta mitzarefes lasara, a little bit, adds up. And we have a lot of people, so if we, it's an important thing that we take a chrayas. Who could understand the chrayas that a parent has? Parent has amazing, amazing responsibility. No kid could understand the responsibility a parent has. You only understand it when you're a parent. By that time, you forget how you were as a kid. Baruch Hashem, But that's amazing achrayas. But that, what I'm speaking about is the yes. But the way you get to being a very good parent is by practicing before we become parents, to try and exercise this midah of taking responsibility for something that we would, that's like totally unselfish. On our own, we would appear like it's not, what am I getting out of it? You're not getting anything out of it. You're taking a chrayas for something. Take a chrayas for something. It's like, showing up when you're supposed to show up. That's like, wow, mamash there on time. If you're not going to be there, you call up. Like Rabbi Feuerman's like the ultimate. I told him I'm going to pick him up at the hotel and bring him here at 9 o'clock. If I'm going to be 1 minute late, I call him. And I say, it looks like I'm going to be a minute or two late. That's like a taking a chrayas, because I said I'd be at a certain time, taking a chrayas. These are different examples of a person feels something, you can do it hopefully to almost to perfection if we could, and a lot of different areas. Just to chazer over, we had the ma'aseh from Esav, that Esav was considered mevaz of the Bukhara, because even though he was handing it over to someone who he thought was definitely more qualified, but he had a mitzvah, you know, boliyatcha, a mitzvah came to his hand, it was his responsibility to do it, and for kavod shamayim, you should try and do it. Gave a couple of stories about, you know, my grandfather. He felt he had an achrayus to watch for his kid brother. He was 85 years old, he was watching out for his little brother. I told you the maisa with the bread in yeshiva on Fridays. Rabbi Welch with the matzahs, great story. Rabbi Welch with the matzahs. I was almost tempted to tell you who the person was. I may have to check with him, I guess, if he minds. So it's a great maisa. Who else? Who else? I just used that story, not the exact story, but there was a kid in the high school. I just told this to. He didn't want to go, I think, to be a counselor or something like that. So I told him, why not? You know, you felt someone could do it better. It was a similar type of thing. And when people come to us trying to stretch, you know, I end up having to do things I never thought. It's like, there's probably laughing in Shemayim. I should end up doing, I could have sworn when I was, you know, your age, I would never, ever, ever be caught speaking in public. It's my worst fear. But, you know, you get stuck doing things that's your achrayus to do. So, yeah, sometimes I say yes because my wife doesn't say, why do you say yes? If you don't want to do it, why do you say yes? So, because they asked me because, I mean, what did they ask me for? They didn't have to ask me. You know, so they asked me. So I tell this by Torah, I really take to heart. I end up doing things that I mamash desperately, you know, don't really want to do, but I feel like it's my achrayus to do it, so I do it. And a person grows from that, and even though, like, their emotion rises, people will think someone else could have done a better job, and the people complain you did a bad job. Despite that, that's the right thing to do. I have one more thing that I'm not going to tell you tonight, but you can remind me about the other story. It was also worth, I don't know if we got a whole lot out of it, but other story. And one other thing I want to just close with, Rabbi Ezra Kier is here to take care of the Sforim. So, like on Simchas Torah, the whole Kier family was here, and I knew Rabbi Ezra was, you know, very keen on the Sforim. He was telling me about the Sforim. I said, the Sforim here on disarray, and I decided I'm going to take a chrayas. I told him that we're going to, you know, we need someone to come down. Will you come down? I had this conversation with Pastor. I said, yeah, you should pay for it. I'll come down. So why don't you come down during the winter, pick a really cold, snowy day in January, February, and you come down, we'll pay for your ticket, and you take care of the Sforim, and I'll give you even more than that. I'll make sure you have full authority. You won't have to go have 10 Hallel meetings to decide if this Sefer can be moved to this shelf. We're setting up the Beis Medrash so that even a guy could walk into the Beis Medrash and put all the Sforim away. That's what we're doing. We're having numbers on it. The shelf and the Sforim will have numbers, corresponding numbers. It'll be easy to take a Sefer. Anyone can go. No one have any excuses. They don't know where the Sefer goes. Does it go to the Rishonim section, the Achronim section, the Halacha section, the Musa section, all the sections? No section. We don't care what section. Just put it anywhere. A little bit, we'll find it. You know, it's a disarray. He showed me that there are ritvas. The sets are ritvas in like four different sections and shelves. So that was my, you know, my simplest Torah, you know, responsibility. I'm going to take achrayus. But achrayus means taking on your shoulders. Now, if anyone complains, I was a little scared because do I know where all the Sforim are? Sharfin knows every safer where there is. He has like my great ideas of where to go. Rabbi Lubin has great knowledge of all the Sforim. He knows where to go. But they're too busy to worry about it. I'm sure whatever he ends up doing is on my say-so. I'm sure Rabbi Lubin is going to say, oh, they messed up all the Sforim. And Rabbi Sharf is going to say, they messed up all the Sforim. And you put the Sforim in the Otzer, or the Mesmenesh, the Beish, and the Penitent, and the Otzer. And everyone's going to be yelling at me. And I still said, you know, I'm here 20 years. No one took care of any Sforim. I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to fly Israel down. and we paid for his ticket, and he's spending it 3 days for, you know, whatever price of a ticket is, and we're going to fix over all the svarim. So we should all get chizik from it, and everyone should take achrayas. Don't make all the decisions before you do surgery. You should check with someone, and we should get chizik from it.